Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Goodrich, Michigan, earning a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in public administration from the University of Michigan. He's been a police officer for 24 years, and since 2011, he's been an under-sheriff for Genesee County. He's the founder of Swanson Leadership, a personal development organization, and the author of Tin Man to Iron Man. His name, Chris Swanson, and we're honored to have him as our guest. And I'm Jack Quisula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Quisula. This is Anything is Possible, and we're talking to Chris Swanson, the author of Tin Man to Iron Man, and also Blood, Guts, and Things That Drive You Nuts. Chris, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Likewise, Jack. It's just a pleasure and a blessing. Thank you so much.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Who doesn't love their mom and dad? You know, I grew up the youngest of four. I was a heavyset kid, did terrible in school, had a bad haircut. Probably my mom was the only one I thought I looked cute. My grandma, too. But one thing I could always do is I could always talk. I could always hustle. I always had a great disposition. I always laughed, and I didn't count on anybody else. And I found out later in life that made up for a lot of emptiness and voids that I didn't have natural. It's a great childhood. And from a young age, at 8 years old, I bought my first horse, paid cash for it. My sister got a goldfish, and I wanted a horse, so I did that. And then from that day forward, I just knew that I could make things happen. It didn't matter how big or how small. If I put my mind to it and developed a plan, I just worked it until it was done. And I saw how that one lesson as a young kid buying his first pony has translated into my entire life to not only achieve the things that I've been able to achieve, but create the person who's able to achieve those. And that's where I get my energy from, convincing people you can go from being tin to iron. It's about creating that person inside of you that can make that happen.
Chris, what's the biggest thing you learned from mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from dad?
My mom has the same personality as I do. She is 77 years old, and she works at a department store to this day. They call her Amazing Grace. She has perpetual energy, and she's always happy. That's what I learned from my mom. My dad never, ever, ever lie. My dad taught integrity. I remember when I was 7 years old, my dad always made us wear dress suits and shiny shoes to church. And we lived in Goodrich, and my dad asked me on a Sunday morning, he's like, "Do you shine your shoes?" "Yes, sir." "Go get them." And I didn't get them. He said, "Go get your shoes." I said, "They already shined." And he knew I was telling a lie. And then when I went and got my shoes and showed him, I saw the back of his hand, and I never forgot that moment. And it wasn't the pain that I still feel. It was that conversation that my dad had with me very forceful at a young age. And he said, "No matter what, whenever I ask you something, you always tell the truth." And I've built my life on having integrity no matter what kind of bullets are flying.
We're talking to Chris Swanson. Chris, where did you get this phenomenal, positive, can-do attitude?
You know what? I'd like to say that I created it, but I do believe that everybody has a superpower. And God wants people to experience life. And I have stacked one thing on top of the other. And victory upon victory upon a downswing, upon a challenge, upon a victory. And I just create it. You know, I've been in so many different situations where I use the example that a power plant doesn't have power. It creates it. And I have, throughout my years, I had it naturally, because I think everybody does. And I decided to choose, no matter what was going on, to continue that positive energy. And so when I got into police work, when I got into being a father and a husband and all sorts of things, I realized that not only do I have it, I have to maintain it because other people are counting on me. And so the more people are given an opportunity, more is required. Too much is given, much is required. And so I just, it just kind of continues to create, and I have no choice but to be positive. And when I look at the blessings from that, when I look at the consequences of my actions, it's an easy decision. Why not be positive and have great outcomes instead of being negative and have terrible outcomes? It's an easy choice, but it comes down to a choice, and I choose to be positive no matter where I am.
Speaking of police work, how was it you chose a career in law enforcement?
My dad was a Detroit police officer during the riots, and I grew up and I heard police stories all the time. When I was a young kid, even before I had any experience, my parents told me that at 5, 6, and 7, I would be telling stories of police work, and I'd tell these fantasy stories of the military, and I, of course, had no experience. But I would just have this imaginary world of taking care of people and helping them. My grandfather did 32 years on DPD, and I would go over to his house, and he lived in Southgate, and I would hear those stories and listen to police scanners. Well, growing up, I just had this knack of helping people and having a care for them. So when I was in 11th grade, I went to meet a counselor, and he said, "Hey, what do you want to do when you get out of here?" He goes, I said, "I'm going right to police academy." He says, "Not with a 1.9 grade point average," and that's what I had starting my 11th grade year. And I remember him saying something along the lines of, police officers can't be dumb. And I said, "Nobody's calling me dumb." So I went, turned it around, got out of high school, and it's the only financial aid I ever received in my entire college career is my local police department gave me a $500 scholarship to go to a community college because I could not get into the University of Michigan. I didn't have the grades and I didn't have the ACT. So I went into a local college and I hooked up with an African-American lady named Dr. Avon Burns, who was as mean as a snake but as loving as Santa Claus. And she took me right in and she had given me harsh love. And she said, "I want to start you in an internship." And the internship was here at the sheriff's office. And that was in 1991. So when I went into this internship, I wanted to be a police officer. I saw my first violent death. A guy shot himself in the head while his wife went to go get Burger King. She came back and discovered him. He was still alive. They called 911. Myself and the local guy that I was riding with, Paul Wallace, responded. And I just could not believe what I was seeing. You couldn't ever explain it in a book or on TV. It was real. And I was 18 years old, and I thought, oh, my gosh. I mean, the smells, the sounds of the screams, all the things that were happening. I said, I need to learn about this even more. So one thing led to another, and I became a licensed paramedic, and I went to police academy in 94. I was hired full-time in 93, and it's just in you. And I tell people there's certain professions and there's jobs, and I've done a lot of jobs. But a profession is what you are created to do by the temperament God's given you. And I believe that I had the temperament to not just call 911, but to be 911. And to this day, I've been a licensed paramedic for 25 years. I've been a police officer for 24, a medical examiner investigator. I command 256 people and manage a $35 million budget. And I love serving folks.
Speaking of 9/11, when we come back, we're going to ask Chris Swanson, what happens when someone calls 911? And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Chris Swanson. Since 2011, he's been the undersheriff for Genesee County. Chris, when somebody dials 911, what happens?
Man, especially in light of everything that's going on, Jack, I'm going to tell you right now, 911 sees no color. 911 sees no orientation. It sees no political affiliation. I love what I do, and I lock arms with brothers and sisters throughout this nation, throughout the world, who respond to people at their worst moments. I used to say as a medic, I'd go to people's places, and I would walk in. It didn't matter how much money they had or where they lived or what happened. When their loved one is hurt or is traumatized, they want to see somebody elevate from out of nowhere and walk into the life and help save them. I take it as a human responsibility that I have, and anybody that works in public service knows exactly what's happened. When you sign up for the military, you train for battle. And when the call comes to go to battle, you go there with honor. And 911 is that battle call for me. And I look at that, and I know that not every police officer is created equal. Not every agency does the right thing. We certainly don't, and I'm certainly not perfect. But I do know this. When you call 911, we're coming. It doesn't matter what the latest newscast is out there. It doesn't matter what the latest headline is. We work our guts out to respond to people that we've never met and to put our lives on the line to protect them and to save them. That's what 911 is.
For the last several years, you've been a tremendous public speaker. You've actually spoken to over 100,000 people. How did you ever get into public speaking?
I used to get in trouble for speaking in class. They used to just put me next to the quietest people, and I would, within 2 days, get us both in trouble. I always loved talking, and I was always gifted at it, and I had a great disposition. And then I found that not a lot of people have that, and people are nervous about going in front of folks. So like anything, just like you and how you started this incredible show and all your amazing guests over the last 12 years, everybody starts out small. Everybody does. No matter where they are right now, everybody starts out small. So I did. And I started teaching CPR classes. I still do. I started teaching Bible studies. I still do. And then one thing led to another, and I would teach, and I would now speak, which is much different. I would go to bigger groups, and I would take on topics that I didn't know as much about that I thought I did, and I would learn it, and I'd use life experiences. And then I realized that people responded to my style of speaking and my passion, and then they were becoming much better for it. And it didn't matter what setting it was. And then I found it as a challenge because, as you know, in my athletic career, I see things as a challenge, as a competition. And so I said, well, I'm gonna master this. And I studied people in the crowd. And that's part of being a detective when we work cases or solicit interrogations and confessions is we study the psychology of the people. So I started studying the psychology of the crowd. And if I had 1,000 people in the crowd and one person not paying attention, I would change my entire talk to suck that person in so they bought into my message. And that, in relation to all my speaking, allowed me to be comfortable on the bigger stages. So when I got the invite to speak at Dave Ramsey's group in Tennessee, his people have seen the best of the best, Zig Ziglar and Michael W. Smith and all sorts of people. And I went on stage, and there was his entire organization, and my pulse rate was 50. At that moment, I knew that this is where I am supposed to be. And I delivered a message about David and the five stones, and I talked about how to be inspired and change your mindset, and people went crazy, a standing ovation. And one thing led to another, Jack, and then I just started doing more on social media, and then I started going to corporations, and then Fortune 500 corporations, and you got 3M, and Rock Ventures, and AG, or Edward Jones, and all sorts of financial companies. And you know, it doesn't matter what the industry is. They love hearing people that can move folks, not give them cotton candy, but give them meat and potatoes. So every event that I do, like I have another event coming up in about 3 weeks in Louisville, Kentucky. I'm going to speak to 12,000 people. And I have known what I was going to say from the second I step on stage 3 months ago. I know when I step on stage that I'm going to illustrate, speak with passion and knowledge. And I have a style of how I do that that is unlike most people have ever seen. And because of that, it just steamrolls. And when I speak, I see it as an opportunity that I have one shot to master. So I never go into a talk. I don't care if I'm talking to a daycare or I'm talking to you. I master this talk to give my best effort because I got one shot. And because of that, that's how I've been able to be put in positions to speak into the lives of just 100,000 people and growing, only on the live events, not the millions of people on the social media side of it, which is a huge honor. You got to put your best effort in because you got one shot.
If you want to learn more, www.swansonleadership.com. And on Friday, November 10th, you've got an event all day in Frankenmuth.
I do.
Tell us a little bit about that.
It's called Iron Life Live. You know, my book, 10 Man to Iron Man, I have transformed my life as a Iron Man finisher 4 times. And I do a live event every year. and it has a limited amount of people, and I pour my heart into these live events. And this one is November 10th from 9 to 4 in Zenders of Frankenmuth, and it is power-packed with inspiration on hope and forgiveness and mindset and decision-making and all the things that people like you and I need every day to be reminded and to be inspired to be 10,000 times better than you were yesterday. It's a transformation deal. I got two guest speakers that are going to blow people's minds. I feed you breakfast. I feed you lunch. I entertain and instruct. Guaranteed, you are not going to come there and waste your time.
Tell me you're going to serve them chicken. In Frankenmuth.
Well, that's the other part of my life. You got to serve a chicken. It just won't be fried.
www.swansonleadership.com. In 2014, you wrote your first book, Tin Man to Iron Man. Chris, what is a tin man?
I can tell you, the people that are listening right now, there are so many that think, I should write a book. Ah, nobody's going to read my story. Well, I thought the exact same thing and until I started getting responses back from people that I spoke to who had already written books that were bestsellers. And they said, you got to write a book, man. I'm telling you. And so my first thing that I want to tell your audience is if you have 1 ounce of desire to write a book, act on it. Because your book is going to be here long before you and long after you. Your story is one that comes and goes, but your book will be there forever. And so somebody had challenged me to do that because I was giving these talks about what a tin man is. And as I myself grew up as a tin man, shiny on the outside, looked good, had it all together. But when pressure came, I crumbled in different areas of my life. I'm thinking, that's stupid. I mean, I failed in these areas. I had it all together on the outside. Financially, I was $480,000 in debt one time, and I didn't realize that because I had all the stuff, and it was dumb. And then I did my first Ironman in 2007, 140.6 miles, Panama City Beach, Florida. And one guy wrote on a banner that my wife made at the finish line of that Ironman. He said, Swanson, you are no longer a tin man. You are officially an Ironman. I mean, I'm getting choked up just thinking that. And it made me realize that one time, Jack, that I was that heavyset kid. I was that kid that nobody thought could ever do anything. And I transformed my life one step at a time. And I became iron. And it may be scratched, and it may be scuffed, but it is an iron foundation that will not be rocked. They can never take that from you. And I preach that message all over the world to say, listen, stop living a tin life. You live an iron life. And when the storm comes, you will sustain. But you got to be the magic. That's why I wrote that book, and that's why I became a bestseller.
I quote you now. Do what most people won't to get what most people want.
Yeah.
Please.
Jack, I talk to people all the time, and I hear people say, I wish I could do this or I should do this. And to me, it's just crap. Because if you wanted it bad enough, if you wished it bad enough, then you would take the steps to make it happen. I am the last guy that anybody should come and give excuses why they can't do something. And I'm not talking about unrealistic goals. I'm talking about goals that are realistic, that places that you need to be in realistically, but you won't put the effort into it. You won't take the steps, sometimes because they don't know it, and that's why I am out there all the time speaking and teaching. But many times they know exactly what to do, but they don't do it. And that's why in that quote I say, it doesn't matter if it's financial. You want to be financially free? Then do what most people want, but they won't do. You got to spend less, make more. You got to be more disciplined. When it comes to your physical presence, your command presence, you know, losing 30 pounds or running your first 5K, do what most people won't do to get what most people want. Who doesn't want to be in shape? Who doesn't want to be able to run 5Ks? Who doesn't want to be able to look in the mirror and go, I'm feeling good? But they won't put in the steps at a Saturday morning at 6 a.m. to go and run during the rain. They won't adjust their eating lifestyle. I don't use diet. I say eating lifestyle. They don't adjust that because it's not convenient. They don't want to do the things. But if people can grasp that if you do the things that most people won't ever do, You will get what most people want, and that's my life. I'm financially free. I feel great in life. I have command presence. God put me in a position of command leadership. I've got a great family. I love the Lord. My kids are solid. I lived in a beautiful house. Well, how did that happen? It just didn't pop. It's been a 25-year overnight success, and I'm still on that journey. I just do things that most people won't do, and I get what most people want. And that's why I have no shame in saying, listen, this stuff wasn't given to me. It was earned. And anybody in life who has something, they, if you ask them, they will tell you they had to earn it when no one's looking. And that's why I tell people, you want something, go do what most people won't, and you'll get it.
We're talking to Chris Swanson, who's often described as a human transformation expert. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're with the most extraordinary person, Christ-centered person, a man of God, Chris Swanson. Chris, you talk about seven rules of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Let's focus on a couple. Number one, you are the hardest person to lead. Please.
Well, I give credit to a lot of my teaching to great men and women before me, including the writers of the Word, John Maxwell, a lot of these people that I have locked onto that I've never met. And one thing that I have pulled from that is exactly what you just said, that if you don't manage yourself, if you don't lead yourself, you cannot lead other people. You know, how can you teach somebody financial fitness if you're not even financially free? I remember going to my bank one time, and I made a deposit, and I was talking to Scott, the bank manager, and I asked him a financial question. He goes, dude, I'm a bank manager. I'm the last one you need to ask. I'm in debt. And I thought that was so stunning even back in my young age, because I'm thinking, well, how can you counsel people? And same thing if you go to the gym and you want to get a personal trainer. You want somebody that can show their own personal results before you're going to give them any credibility. And so I tell people, what area of life are you lacking? Well, you're the one that's got to take ownership to that. And don't you dare try to get other people to follow you if you haven't done it yourself. That's why I say, you know, the old saying of do as I say, not as I do is absolutely a lie. No. If you're going to be the example, then you do what you do and you ask people to do it better. But you better be the one in the driver's seat pushing yourself to the nth degree when no one's looking 24/7.
We're talking to Chris Swanson about his seven rules of leadership. Rule number two, deny yourself. Three, have patience. Four, be accountable. Five, leaders validate themselves. And Chris, let's talk about number six, defining moments define you. Please.
You know, if you ask people where were they when they first heard about September 11th and we were attacked, they can instantly pull in their mind where they were. That's a defining moment in our nation. But I'm talking about the defining moment in your own personal life. Jack, there was a point in time that I have such a creative mind that I used to build commercial haunted houses, and I would send thousands and thousands of people through. But my bride was never supportive. She didn't like the culture. She didn't like the crowd I was with, and she knew from the end of August all the way till the middle of November I was gone every weekend. She wasn't settled with it. So I did that for 4 years, made a bunch of cash, and the fifth year, something drastically changed. I wasn't able to do the haunt, and I had all this stuff, and I built it up, and the sixth year, I said, that's it. I'm going to build it bigger and better. So I leased a huge building, a 50,000-square-foot building, and I started in January doing all my stuff, and I put all this money in, and lo and behold, make a long story short, September hit, and I got a stop work order from the local jurisdiction. The building inspector shut me down. And overnight, I lost $100,000 cash, overnight. And I remember walking into my house, knowing that I lost it. I couldn't recover. And my wife is there, had no clue. And I just broke down in tears, and I had to apologize. And I said to her, I lost our savings, but I'm going to make it back tenfold. Mark my words. That's a defining moment. Nobody knows that conversation. Nobody was there. But my greed and my ignorance to listen to my bride cost me, and I've never forgotten that moment. And so when I say those defining moments define you, everybody's got them. Everybody listening to this conversation we're having has those defining moments, and they're not always bad. Sometimes they're amazing, crossing the finish line when they're saying, Chris Swanson from Davison, Michigan, you are an Iron Man. That's a defining moment. Those things define you because it's how you respond. You know, did I get an attitude of bitterness when I lost that? Did I go and attack people? No. It's how I responded that defined me. When I crossed the finish line, do I rub it up people's faces? I did an Iron Man. You can't. Why can't you do it? No. I use that to inspire people. So a defining moment defines you. Good or bad, that not only has to do with the actual moment, but how you respond. Are you responding with grace and mercy and humbleness? Are you responding with arrogance and bitterness and anger? Your choice.
When we had lunch recently, we talked about this Dr. Charles Stanley, In Touch Ministries, that we both think the world of,
yeah,
and his 30 life principles.
That's right.
And we talked about number 15. Brokenness is God's requirement for maximum usefulness. Please.
Jack, in 2011, September the 10th, my son, he was 10 years old. He was playing football, and he took the ball, ran to the left, and he got hit, and it snapped his right femur in half. And it was a day that was a defining moment. We took him down to Beaumont Hospital, and I remember meeting with the orthopedic surgeon, and he said they're going to put a rod and they're going to put some pins in. And I said, well, how about the strength of that bone? And he says, you know what? There's no bone that's stronger than the one that's broken. And that's where brokenness comes. Brokenness is God's requirement for maximum usefulness, because when you and I are broken and we heal, you never forget that. And your effectiveness is magnified. That's why brokenness is a requirement for maximum usefulness in this world.
One more, number 24 from Dr. Charles Stanley's 30 Life Principles. To live the Christian life is to allow Jesus to live his life in and through us.
You know, when you have all the responsibility, it is a heavy burden. And I tell people, I did not become a man when I clicked my heels and swore an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States, the Constitution of the State of Michigan, and faithfully discharge my duties as a deputy sheriff. I didn't become a man when I got married or had kids or become an Ironman. I became a man when I humbled myself before the feet of the Lord and said, you are in control of my life. And there is a spirit that came over me, Jack, that takes away all burden from Chris. I don't have to do it. The magic is not me. If you were to look at my desk right now, you would see a memo that I wrote to me on December the 18th, 2015. And it says, Chris, God's got it. Get out of the way.
Earlier, you mentioned the word forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a listener tonight that heard that word and said, Chris, I buy what you're saying, but this guy did me dirty years ago. I'll never forgive him.
Yeah.
I can't forgive him. I'll die in my grave before I forgive him. What do you say to that person?
Why would you let that guy hurt you 30 years in a row? Why would you let that person rent space in your head for 30 years? Don't condone what they did. I'm not asking you to take warm showers. I'm telling you, forgive. And you are not asking forgiveness or giving forgiveness for them. You're asking it, giving it for yourself. And I give this example anytime this question, because you're right, I don't know what these people did. I don't know. I deal in a business where people, you know, molest kids and hurt folks, and there's a lot of reasons to hate and unforgive, and I totally get that. But if I had a medication that could heal your disease and it did it for me and I'm handing it to you, why wouldn't you take it? Because if you want to see the power of forgiveness, then go ask somebody who gave forgiveness to somebody who was hurt just as bad as you, and they will tell you, just like I'm telling you, there is a 1,000-pound weight lifted off your chest when you let it go. When you let it go. You're not going to forget it, and you're never going to condone it. But just let that that unforgiveness go. Let that bitterness and poison go. And you'll find, and I can't make people do it, but I just convince them, if you try it once, you'll see that you are the one set free.
We're talking to Chris Swanson, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything is Possible. We're talking to Chris Swanson, the author of Tin Man to Iron Man. If you want to learn more, www.swansonleadership.com. Chris, there's a dad listening tonight.
That's right.
What do you say to the dad?
Don't ever, ever stop being a dad to your kids. And the best example you can give to your kids is to stay married to their mother, to build a relationship with their mother. Do not abandon your child, period. You have to love them unconditionally for the rest of your natural life.
What do our kids truly want and need today, Chris Swanson?
They need love. I mean, in the Bible, I mean, what's the greatest commandment? To love the Lord with all your heart, soul, and mind. Matthew 22. What's the second greatest commandment? Love your neighbors yourself. Common theme, love. Young people, teenagers, you and I, we seek love. We need love. We need that companionship. And you've got families busted up and blown up here and there. I can go right now in my own field, and I can tell you that most of these people, they have a dad who flaked out and won't follow through. That's what people need. That's what kids need. They need love. They need attention. They need value. They need edification. And love is spelled time, T-I-M-E. So if you're a part-time dad, you're going to have a part-time kid.
We got a lot of single moms out there.
Yeah.
Talk to the single moms, please.
Listen, baby, don't give up. Don't give up. When a single mom is raising a child, there's financial concerns. There's the burden of trying to fill the dad role and take them here and take them there. And there's multiple kids. And then you feel betrayed and you start to think about all the things you could have, would have, should have done. This is what I'd tell moms. And I'm begging men that are out there that are listening for the right motives, not a sexual intention, not an illicit intention. A mom has to find a man that can step into the lives of her children and mentor them to teach boys how to be men and to teach them how to be good husbands and good fathers. And it doesn't matter. It could be in a sporting event arena. It could be in a biblical arena, or it could be in an educational. But there's men out there that have to step up and say, these are not my kids, but I'm going to be a good mentor to them. Moms have to find somebody to teach boys how to be men. They can't do that themselves all the time. They don't have the skill set. I can't teach a girl how to be a girl because I'm not. So single moms, don't give up. Find somebody for your boys to pour your life into. Same thing with your girls. You got to pour your life into them. And if you're struggling, grab people, ask people, solicit people. And if five people turn you down, go to five more. There's people around you. And if this country can build a family back, you will see a change in the way we think and how we act. The problem with this country today is we have abolished our values from years past, and we're paying the price for it, and we can't see the truth.
I could just hear the single mom saying, amen, amen, amen. That's great, Chris Swanson. But I've been praying to God for him to bring some man into my son's life, my daughter's life. How do I find that person?
It's a great question, and it's not an easy answer. Number one, you keep praying. You stay obedient. You don't give up. You keep finding people. It's just like going through a hiring process. You're going to see people. You're going to seek people. You got to find some folks out there. And if you can't, then you go. And there's such follow me. I'm telling you right now. I'm not soliciting for a free commercial here, but I promote stuff every single day. I have ways that people can connect to me 24 hours a day. If you don't have a human being in your life, then you find somebody who can speak to them in a social platform. But there's always somebody out there. There's always. But do not give up. I don't care if you've been praying for 5 years. Pray for another year. Don't quit. You cannot quit. And for dads, I got one more message, Jack. I forgot to tell you this, that if you're not loving your kids, somebody else is.
www.swansonleadership.com. Speaking of somebody else is, heroin today is at its all-time strength.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've got this thing called fentanyl, which is 100 times more powerful, Chris, than heroin. Now we've got something, carfentanil, which is 100 times more powerful than fentanyl.
That's right.
Chris, is therefore 10,000 times more powerful than heroin. You just touch carfentanil and you die. Cops have died from touching clothing of kids who have taken carfentanil.
Mm-hmm. It's an elephant tranquilizer. I can tell you, when I first started police work, it was weed and crack cocaine. Now, weed's legalized for medical use in Michigan. Obviously, cocaine and crack are diminished. They're still out there. Nothing is taking this country like heroin. And when I ask people what a heroin addict looks like, they can't answer it anymore because it looks just like us. I have had people where we've responded, and mom and dad are there in the middle of an intersection dead with needles out of their arms, and their kids are in the back seat and car seats. It is Satan, I'm telling you. We call it, it's the dragon. One of my dear friends, Rob Martin, he overdosed 12 times on heroin, lost his wife, lost his kids, his job. He's been clean for 7 years. You can get off of this, but it is the hardest thing to break. Carfentanil just takes it to another level. And the one thing about the heroin that's killing people is the concentration is not regulated. So they may get it from the same supplier, but all of a sudden that supplier is getting somebody from someone else, and that's why they're dying within seconds. And it is taking this country by storm. And back that all up, what's precipitating that is the prescription pill addictions, because you go to the doctor, Jack, and when you leave there in America, what do you need to walk out with to feel like they did their job?
90 of the pills, right?
That's right.
We used to get 2 of the pills.
That's right. You need to get those pills or they didn't do their job. And then those pills run out, your body develops a tolerance and a dependence. They then say, well, I can't give them anymore. Then other people say, I got some extra, and then those run out, and then you go on the street, and it's a slippery slope. I wonder what it's going to take to reverse this. And it's only going to have to be an act of God, because heroin is here to stay. It's a business, it's an industry, and it's killing our people.
As our time winds down, you lead a program within high schools entitled Chasing the Dragon. What's your basic message in that program to our kids?
Well, it started out because 2 white girls in Fenton died within a week of each other. It used to be that heroin was seen as an urban drug until the white people started dying, and then everybody started getting focused on that and thinking, oh, we got a problem. No, we don't have a problem. We've had a problem. And then we've taken those beautiful people, and we've created a following to show that these two, Erica Schlosser, And the stories that are wrapped around her and her family, who get to share the 911 call and they get to share what happened. You know, Brianna Jahari, the mom and dad crying to 911 to send somebody to save her daughter. We bring the people in who are impacted by that, and we show the reality of it. And what we found is by that program, we've showed it to over 25,000 people, and it's so raw and it's conjuring up so much emotion that people have to see the reality of it before they can understand how deadly it is. And that's why we do the program. It shows the reality of what happens when the dragon chases you and wins.
Chris Swanson, please keep being a human transformation expert and let God use you every day. You're doing a great job.
Amen, Jack. Thank you so much. Thank you to your listeners. God bless.
Please join us next week. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol.